here. I say that a lot, but I mean it. It is encouraging to me to know that you have come for this service, and you've come to worship God, but also to engage in a period of study with me. And I'm thankful for that. Glad to see Jim back. He hasn't felt well the last couple of days, but is doing well. And glad to see Miss Kim back. She's a tough lady. She had her rotator cuff surgery this past week on Thursday, and I didn't think you'd be able to keep her down for very long, and she is up and at 'em. So good to see you, Kim. Since an announcement has been made about our services, let me remind you that the services, when we are here, the sermon portion is online. And I know Rusty says the Neals contacted him this morning. They're not feeling well. And asked about the sermon, and Rusty told them how to access it. And in about an hour, she messaged him back and said, "We listened to the sermon." So I know that's not all there is to a service, but it is the part that we're able right now to record. And if you don't happen to be here, or somebody else is not able to be here, go to our website. And it's hard to remember, seymourcoc.org, as simple as that. And go to the Sermons tab, and click on it, the 2020 sermons, and you'll find them posted almost immediately when they're done. Tim takes good care of that, does a good job with that. Thank you, Tim. And some have asked us about live streaming. I want you to know that we are working to that end. As a matter of fact, the camera that will allow us to do that has been purchased. It has arrived. It is here. It will take us a little while to get all of that set up and to decide exactly how we're going to do that and the platforms that we may present those on. But we'll work as much as we can, as hard as we can, to get that done. And that means if you are not able to be here, that not only will you be able to listen to the sermon, but you'll be able to see what goes on. So keep that in mind, and we'll let you know when all of that is ready to go. I can remember a time, and I suspect many of you can, when business was conducted very simply. When I was visiting my grandparents' farm, we lived on that farm for a little while when I was very young, and then I went back every summer and spent time there. My grandfather would send me to the store, to Ray Miller's store. And it took me about 15 minutes to walk up the dirt road to the store. It was one of those where you could get anything you wanted. You could get a pound of bologna and a pair of blue jeans and some shells for your 22 and just whatever you needed. And business was conducted very simply. I would tell him what I wanted. He would write it down in a little book. And at the end of the month, my grandfather would go, and he would just tally that, and my grandfather would pay. We used to call those jot-em-down stores. And I can remember when you closed a deal just with a shaking of hands. We're going to do this. I'll do this. Okay, I'll buy this. Shake hands. And that was as good as any contract could be. And I remember a time when if you borrowed money from somebody, you didn't have to sign a whole ream of papers with a lot of legalese. You just signed an IOU. I owe you X amount of dollars. And that was good. Do you realize that as Christians, we owe one another something? There are some things that we owe one another. And I want you to know that I owe you. And I want you to know that you owe me. That we mutually owe one another some things. As a matter of fact, one of the great teachings of the Scripture is that we are one another people, that we do not exist in isolation. And I have preached a number of sermons in the past, even here, on those one another passages. I want to go to one passage of Scripture tonight. I want to go to Galatians chapter 6. And we're going to work through five verses of that chapter. And in those five verses, we're going to find five things that Christians owe one another. And I'm going to encourage us to pay our debts. I'm going to encourage us to do for one another, to one another, the things that we owe one another. So that's Galatians chapter 6. The first thing is in just the first line of the first verse, and it's very subtle. As a matter of fact, you have to think about it a little while to get this point. Brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass. Did you notice that little word, if? Paul doesn't say, well, I know you have been. He doesn't say, I know you will be. He just says, if you happen to be overcome with a fault. Here's my point. We owe one another the benefit of the doubt. We should not be people who jump to conclusions. You know, our judicial system is based upon a premise that we all men are innocent until proven guilty. Wouldn't it be nice if that's the way it really was? Sometimes we are guilty until proven innocent, and even then, it's not enough. I believe we owe one another the benefit of the doubt. When I hear something about you, I don't have the responsibility to run and share that with everybody. I need to give you the benefit of the doubt. What I heard may absolutely not be the case. It's like the fellow who said to someone he met and heard his name, said, I hear you made $1 million in oil in Texas. He said, well, that's almost the truth. He said, first of all, it was gas, not oil. And secondly, it was my brother, not me. And thirdly, he lost $1 million instead of making it. But other than that, you're right. We just like to hear things. We like to make up things. We like to run with things. I appreciated, and I'll say again, the care and concern for us that our elders have expressed. And I made the comment this morning that because of my age and because of my underlying health issues, that I'm not going to go through my normal means of greeting people. I'm just not going to do that. You may do as you will. Doesn't mean I love you any less, care any less for you. I just don't want to do that for a little while. And I believe you need to respect that, as I need to respect you. And we need not jump to conclusions about what all that means. I'm rather transparent. I'll tell you what it means for me. I don't want to put myself at any more risk than I have to. And I don't want to put you at any more risk than I have to. I'm going to look forward to being with you every Sunday morning. And sitting on this stool somewhere and presenting a lesson for us that I hope will be beneficial. But one of the things that we owe one another is the benefit of the doubt. We must not imagine the worst with our brethren. I know there are people who are far less than they ought to be. But I also know that there are some who are far more than we think them to be. I know there are people who are striving diligently to live the Christian life. And while I'm saying this, let me just throw in a caveat. Sometimes we call people hypocrites, and we don't have an idea of what the word means. Somebody who's striving earnestly to do right and messes up sometimes is not a hypocrite. That's not what the word means. To use it that way is to misuse the word. Hypocrite is a pretender, is a play actor. Hypocrite is somebody who says one thing only because it suits the occasion and plays to the crowd. It comes from the stage, where one actor might play different roles in the same presentation and just go change a mask. And they were just pretending. I believe my brethren, pound for pound, are the best people in the world. I owe them my love and my respect, and I owe them the benefit of the doubt. And one reason I owe them that is because I want that for me. The golden rule in Matthew 7:12, all things whatsoever you would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them, for this is the law and the prophets. Which simply means I look at you and say, here's how I would want you to treat me. So I'll treat you that way. No matter how you treat me, doesn't have a bearing on the situation. I will treat you as I would be treated. And so Paul begins this chapter, if a man, not since a man or not because a man, but if a man. Number two, we owe one another a concern for our souls. Pick up the reading. Brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of gentleness. I need to look at you and care about what goes on in your soul. Realizing that there are people who are caught up in a trespass. Now, you know my passion for words, and here is an example of that. Overtaken in any trespass is from a word that means ensnared. It doesn't mean somebody who just sits down and says, I know this is wrong, and I'm going to do it. I don't care. I had heard a woman tell my father one time. He was trying to talk with her about a sinful behavior that she had. And she said, I don't care what the Bible says. I'm going to do what I want to in this matter. Well, how do you deal with somebody like that? And this verse is not talking about people like that. This is people who are ensnared. It's like a bird caught in a trap. Now, again, when I was growing up, I know you young people tire of us old codgers telling you what it was like when we were young, but it's the only life I have, and I can tell you about that. We made rabbit traps, rabbit boxes. Any of the rest of you ever do that? You make a little box, and you put a little door in it, you put some food back in there, and you set up a mechanism so that when the rabbit gets in there, the door goes down, and you've got a rabbit. Now, when you couldn't go to the store and buy everything you can now at Kroger's or Food City, we ate a lot of wild game. And that rabbit wasn't intending to get caught. He was ensnared. He was caught in that trap. Sometimes we get caught in traps. Don't intend to. But we're ensnared. And Paul simply says, when that occurs, we need to help one another through that. I would imagine that when certain physical things happen, that we would get all excited. If the word came that any of our members, anybody associated with this congregation, had lost everything in a fire, can you imagine what the response of the congregation would be? I think we would immediately spring into action. If money was needed, we'd collect money, the church would give money. If clothing was needed, we would buy clothing, give clothing. if food was needed. I mean, immediately we would spring into action. I wonder sometimes why it is that we get so caught up in those kind of physical things and ignore the spiritual. You know how the game is played, honestly? About 3 or 4 weeks after somebody is not present for a service, we usually ask the preacher and or the elders, you know what's wrong with so-and-so? Now, I'll admit that the preacher and the elders ought to know. I would say that elders, as the shepherds of the flock, need to know those things. Don't you? Don't you agree with that? I think the preacher needs to know about those things. But you know what? This passage says, brethren. And I think that includes sistern, too. Is that the female equivalent of brethren, sistern? I think it includes them, too. Why do we not know those things? Keep your thumb where it is in Galatians chapter 6. And go with me to James chapter 5. And I want to read a companion passage there, beginning in verse 20. Or verse 19, rather. James 5, beginning at 19. Brethren, if anyone among you wanders from the truth and someone turns him back, let him know that he who turns a sinner from the error of his way will save a soul from death and cover a multitude of sins. Isn't it interesting that James says much the same thing as Paul said? That I owe you a care and a concern for your soul. As a preacher, that means that sometimes I have to say publicly, now folks, this is wrong behavior. This is not the way we ought to behave. I have that obligation. You can't fault me for that. As a matter of fact, I would think you would demand that I do that. I would think when our elders have to take someone aside and say, listen, this behavior is not right. It's dangerous. I think you would appreciate that or should appreciate that. It's their responsibility as shepherds of the flock to do that. One of the things that I owe you and you owe me and we owe one another mutually is care and concern for our souls. Why do you suppose we don't do better? There's another word in there that I think may explain that. Brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one. Spiritual. If we're not spiritually minded, if we're not thinking spiritually, then I don't care much about your soul. I'm more concerned about your house burning down. But if I'm spiritual, if I'm thinking spiritually, then I am concerned about your soul. And I want to do all that I can to help you go to heaven, as I want you to do all you can to help me to go to heaven. Now, the third thing is in the last part of that verse. Three things in one verse. Brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. I owe you the proper attitude when I deal with sins and weaknesses. Gentleness. When it comes to punishment, there are some parents who punish without being gentle. There are some parents who intend to hurt a lot their children. I think those people are abusers. Now, what we do may cause pain, but we do it out of a heart that cares. We do it even though it may be difficult and hard. We do it as gently as we know how to do it. And sometimes that's just simply in our tone of voice. My father, as I've told you before, believed in corporal punishment. I started to say capital punishment, but I don't think he went that far with it. But he believed in corporal punishment. But I know on a number of occasions he would say, "Tommy, I'm very upset with you." Now, I'm going to give this some time for me to calm down. And I'll get back with you. I'll tell you, the time until he got back with me was terrible. Because I anticipated, I feared. And generally, my fears were justified. But I appreciate the fact, at least, that he just wasn't flying off the handle. But he was saying, "Let me get a hold of my emotions. Let me think this through. Let me figure out what is appropriate. And then I'll do that." When we deal with one another, it's no time to be harsh and mean-spirited, condescending, self-righteous. I have told you that growing up, people would take me to task at the door and, as we would say on the farm, clean my plow. And I took it. I've learned I don't have to do that. I just don't. Because I've had people who disagree with me be less than kind to me, less than gentle. And usually in a crowd of people. To embarrass me even further. Friends, I don't think that's right of any of us. I think we need to deal gently and kindly with one another. We are to proceed as spiritual men and women gently. And he says, considering yourself. I want to know who here, just raise your hand and be recognized, is without fault and has no sins of your own. Well, I don't see any hands going up. I certainly would not have the nerve to raise mine because that's not so. I have to look at you as a person who has faults of my own. And I need to be careful in dealing with you and the faults I believe that you have. I owe you a gentle, kind spirit. I need to deal with you after having looked at myself. In Matthew 7, you remember that passage that starts out at the first, "Judge not that you be not judged." He says, "With what measure you shall be judged. And why do you behold the mote that is in your brother's eye and do not consider the beam that is in your own?" There he uses the word hypocrite, "thou hypocrite." First, cast the beam out of your own eye, and then you'll see clearly to cast the mote out of your brother's eye. The fourth point is in verse 2. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. The word for burden refers to a soldier's pack. One of the shows that I watch frequently on television is one of the cop shows. And every once in a while, somebody will try to run away from the police. And I saw one recently where the arresting officer had been a tight end for Clemson University. And some crazy guy tried to run on him. He got less than a half a block, and he was taken down, not gently at all, but as a tight end might tackle a ball carrier. And then he said, you chose the wrong guy to run on. And the fellow said, yeah. He said, look at me. I've got all of this equipment on. I've got about 40 pounds of equipment on, and I outran you. He said, oh, by the way, I used to play football for Clemson. We all carry packs. We all carry burdens. We all carry loads. Now, there are things that we bear that we cannot help one another with. There are some things that the only help that you can get in that situation is from the Lord. I cannot help you with that. But there are burdens that I can help you bear. I'm talking about sickness. I'm talking about loss. I'm talking about loneliness. I'm talking about confusion. I'm talking about misunderstandings. There are burdens that you carry that I may be able to help you with. Now, I have to know about it. And I know everybody who has a burden thinks that everybody else knows about it. But sometimes we don't. Sometimes we missed it. Sometimes we were talking about something else and it just went over our heads and it did not register. But when we're made aware of needs, we ought to be people who are willing to do what we can do. I believe that the need plus our ability to meet the need is what gives us opportunities. Sometimes I don't know the need. Sometimes I don't have the ability to meet the need. But when I know the need and I have the ability, I have the responsibility of helping with problems. Galatians 6:10, as we therefore have opportunity, let us do good to all men, especially those of the household of faith. And then one last thing in verses 4 and 5. But let each one examine his own work, and then he will have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another. For each one shall bear his own load. One of the things that I owe you is the best example that I can give you. That's a tall order. It's a tall order. We do not always leave the best example. But it's our responsibility to do that. Brian was talking about that this morning in his leading our class on the 90th Psalm about the little boy who was trying to step in the steps of his daddy. And there's somebody who is looking at us and is judging whether they want to be a Christian or not because of what we're doing, or somebody who's following us. The text really says, each man should test his own actions. It's a whole lot easier to examine the works of others, isn't it? It's so much easier to see what you're not doing versus what I'm not doing that I should be. And I will confess to you that sometimes there are times that I stand and look in the mirror, not only because I need to know if my hair is combed as it should be, or if my tie knot is straight. But sometimes I just look and say, Tom, you need to do better. You need to do better. You need to set a better example. And I think that's a healthy thing. Because I believe we all need to do better. Jesus is our perfect example. We're to follow in his steps. But it is in following him that we become worthy examples. Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 11:1, be followers of me as I also am of Christ. And so the only way that we're safe to be followed is when we're following him. And then people can follow us because we're setting the right kind of example. Have you acknowledged your IOU? Do you really believe that you owe people these things? Are you fulfilling your IOU? I trust that you are. I get sermon material in interesting places. You're familiar with the comic strip Peanuts. Lucy said to Charlie Brown, "Charlie, why are we here on earth?" Charlie thought for a moment and he said, "Lucy, we're here to make other people happy." Lucy said, "Well then, why are other people here?" I don't know that I'm here to make you happy. I don't think I could do that. But I am here to give you the benefit of the doubt. I am here to show concern for your soul. I am here to have the right attitude of gentleness. I am here to help you with your problems if I can. And I am here to set a good example before you. Thank you ever so much.